The next case of the morning is number 013693, Yadigar Sargis against the INS. And we should have Mr. Harris on the speakerphone. Mr. Harris, this is Judge Ripple in the Court of Appeals. We've called your case, and we are ready to hear from you.
Thank you, sir. Can I start?
Please.
Okay. As a prisoner, designing out of this circuit, left the country by a man to avoid persecution based on her religion of being Christian. This is the paramount issue in the case. The courts below have found that her persecution was not sufficient to grant her asylum, that she only suffered discrimination. The question that arises here is how do we get from discrimination to the persecution to get the grant of asylum? The petitioner in her country is testifying that she had to wear the Islamic garb, the headdress, and the cover. During the last 12 years she lived in that country since the Islamic Revolution in 1978. She found that offensive. She went to church, and the church was guarded by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, and her services were overseen by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. She tried to eat food, which was rationed. She received coupons. These coupons for her food made it necessary for her to travel to the mosque, not the church, to receive her food. Once appearing at the mosque, she suffered persecution by the fact that she was placed into the line for being a Christian. And when it came time for her to eat, there was no food. Many times she had to change her eating habits, and many times she had to buy food from the black market. The courts below have cited the fact that she didn't suffer any persecution, and she wore the Islamic headdress and garb freely, and she didn't complain about it. The persecution that we are claiming is the torture of wearing the headdress and the garb. I have a brief from the service of the government, the red one before you, written by Joshua Brunson, and I would ask Mr. Brunson if he would wear the cross of Christianity 12 years and feel he was not being tortured. I know that Mr. Blair O'Connor will be arguing the government's case today. And I asked him if he would wear a yarmulke and wear a talis for 12 years, not complaining. In addition to this, I say to you, these two individuals, I say, as in Iran, in this case, in this particular counsel, through the witness that appears in court, her niece, and even a woman who had this similar issue, it was the same situation as the petitioner, that upon not wearing the headdress and the garb, that paint was sprayed in her face, that they knew that the next time, the second offense of this, that a woman would have acid put in her face and or glass rubbed in her face. The petitioner didn't go through this. She was there when it happened to her niece. Her niece, because these events fled Iran, came to the United States, and received political asylum, and is now a citizen of the United States. So it leaves the petitioner to stay here. That, only reason she's not receiving political asylum from the court below is because she didn't leave her headdress off one day and got sprayed in the face with paint. In addition to this, her household was filled out by a husband who is listed in the brief what his problems were, who died in 1988, and her son that fled Iran to continue his Armenian education, higher education in Italy. The government is sealing off her persecution because nothing happened to her. They're saying nothing happened to her. And I say to you that this case would not be different if she was 4 days incarceration and they knocked her 2 front teeth out. This would not make the case. The case is made by the fact that it is the position of the revolutionary government of a theocracy of Iran to make these people be Muslims. That she is, one, a woman, she's her group, her ethnicity is Armenian, her religion is Armenian Christian, and the government of Iran is not letting her be this freely. Freely, that's the important part. They are making her dress as a Muslim, eat where they distribute Muslim food, and then when they go to church, the Muslims are watching. And then what are they watching? They're watching that they don't violate Muslim code. So if you're in church, you go in the front of the church, and you kneel before the head of the church and preach, and you take off your headdress to receive holy water, that you're now not wearing your headdress, you're in trouble. You can be prosecuted. You can be taken into jail. You can have paint sprayed on your face or the glass of the air. So I submit to this court that this lady was traveling in the circle of persecution in her family. The niece is here. The niece testified. The niece received political asylum. And all it was one day in the street, she took off her headdress and she was sprayed with paint. That's it. So I can't understand why the government puts forth this lady. The petitioner does not have proper persecution. The persecution is in the treatment she received, in the wearing of the garb. It is as if it was handcuffed. I could not go every day in the support of religion all day long and rip the part all day long if it wasn't my religion. That's not freedom of religion.
Mr. Harris, may I add, this is Judge Ripple, if I may ask a question. I noticed, looking at the docket of the court, that there was some problem in filing your brief in this case, and the court issued several rules to show cause as to why the case ought not be dismissed. Can you elaborate for me as to what the problem was?
Yes, thank you for that question. This lady was a long-time resident of California, and came to our law firm. As a resident of California, her case is in California, and he mistakenly filed it in the Ninth Circuit out here in California. And the government was kind enough to stipulate with us to bring it to the Seventh Circuit. During the time that we had to put the brief in, not being familiar with the rules of the Seventh Circuit, we put the brief in, and then there was certain problems. Oh, when we thought it was transferred, they transferred the notice of the petition that starts the case and you save $100. And we thought that when they were transferring the case in proto up to that point. So we thought it was the notice of petition and the brief that was being transferred because we had already sent in our brief and of course the certified transcript had been sent. So we thought it just picked up from there. And of course that was wrong. In addition to that, when we started to brief it for the Seventh Circuit, we didn't realize that a briefing schedule doesn't come. This is not the petitioner's fault. We obviously it's the lawyer's fault. And
I think I have the gist of your comments, sir, as to what happened. I appreciate it. Can I ask you another question about your client? I gather you've been in touch with her recently?
Yes, sir. She doesn't speak that English.
I see. And tell me, what age is she now?
She has been born in 1929, and I make that out to be 73.
I see. And these proceedings were commenced 10 years ago, as I understand it.
Yes, sir.
So when she be, when the INS proceeded against her in deportation, she was 63.
Yes.
Can you indicate to me from your perspective why this has taken 10 years?
Yes, sir. That's certainly very easy. When she applied in the early 90s, before the INS, and I'm sure the government will agree with me, they had a policy where if you put in the 589 of political asylum application, they give you automatic work authorization. Anybody who was illegal in the United States and didn't have work authorization put in one of these pieces of paper, a 589 and a petition for political asylum, and there was a tremendous backlog in the early 90s. And then, of course, there was a court case in your circuit in Chicago that took a rather lengthy amount of time. So it was not uncommon for a case to start in 1991 and because of the backlog not come to court in 95, 96, 97. And then the BIA is, of course, I'm sure you read in the newspaper and see every day, is just bogged down 65,000 cases.
Now
this was a normal procedure. From the early 90 cases, they were just caught in a quagmire of too many applications, and it's certainly not anybody's fault. It's just that people were abusing the system.
I gather if we were not to grant relief here, the consequence would be that your client at age 73 would find herself in Iran and apparently has no immediate family there, am I right?
She has no relatives whatsoever, no place to live, and must start out in an Islamic country.
Well, now is...
As a Christian, which
I understand. Has her physical condition remained the same in the last 10 years?
No, she is a hobbler. I mean, I'm not that old, but I'll tell you that. When she comes to my office,
Now, is there any way that you can does she have any remedy, administrative remedy, before the INS, because of the length of time and the deterioration of her age? Is she eligible?
I don't know if they make the rules, but I'll tell you that if you deny her case, I go down to the deportation branch of the INS, and I file something called the deferred enforcement of her deportation because of her physical health. And then they just, if they believe it, and this lady has been found credible at trial, and they've always told the truth, which is a lovely thing to have as a petitioner, she goes down to the deportation branch, and they give her deferred inspection in about 6 month interval. She goes down and reports into deportation. And pretty much they hold most people with her condition in the United States just under that kind of guise.
I see.
I mean, she has no way to get a green card if you deny her case. She has no way to get any benefits if you deny her case. She does not take benefits from the United States government, and she has the health situation.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll now hear from Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Blair O'Connor and I represent the Immigration and Naturalization Service. We are asking the Court today to deny the petition for review, essentially because petitioner has failed to establish her eligibility for asylum. I believe her counsel summed it up best when he said that she found being forced to wear the Islamic dress was offensive. And I would admit, I would concede that as a Christian, if I were forced to wear the dress of another religion, I would find that objectionable or offensive. But the bottom line is the law of this circuit and other circuits is that conduct that is offensive does not rise to a level of persecution. Petitioner has failed to present evidence that would compel a reasonable fact finder to conclude that the requisite fear of a well-founded fear of persecution exists in this case. While she has demonstrated that she would face discrimination, we would face harassment if returned to Iran, but this circuit and other circuits have held that does not rise to the level of persecution.
How do you distinguish her case from that of her niece, I guess?
Your Honor, unfortunately, her niece's asylum case and the evidence that was presented in that case is not before this court. It's not in the administrative record. I'm afraid that I don't know what happened in the asylum case presented by her niece. There may have been additional incidents of more severe acts beyond the spray painting in the face thing that her niece presented that persuaded the immigration judge or the board. Unfortunately, I'm not prepared. I'm not don't know what happened.
Was the niece's case brought up at all in the immigration proceeding, deportation proceedings in this case, either before the ALJ or before the board?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. It's not an administrative record. The immigration judge did not ask the niece any questions regarding her case or anything like that.
And the petitioner has not filed any petition to reopen or anything on that ground?
No, Your Honor. Your Honor, in this court's review of the board's decision is a deferential one. Basically, it must determine whether or not the board's decision was supported by substantial evidence. A well-founded fear of persecution must be both objectively genuine and subjectively genuine and objectively reasonable. To prove objective reasonableness, an alien must show credible, direct, and specific evidence that a reasonable person in the same circumstances would fear persecution if returned to his country. Now, persecution is an extreme concept, Your Honor, as it doesn't include every sort of treatment that our society would regard as offensive. Discrimination on the basis of race and religion, while definitely morally reprehensible, does not ordinarily amount to persecution within the meaning of the Immigration and Nationality Act. This court has ruled that harsh conditions shared by an entire population does not amount to persecution, nor does punishment which results from violating the country's laws of general applicability. In Iran, the Muslim dress code applies to all females, regardless of religion. Petitioner has presented no evidence to either the immigration judge or the board that she was in any way singled out for persecution on account of her religion or membership in a particular social group.
Ground glass is used against both Muslim and Christian individuals. Is that your point?
Again, all we have is evidence that was before the immigration judge. We have her niece who testified that she did witness it. The niece did not give any evidence as to who the person was, whether she was a Muslim or a non-Muslim who had, you know, glass ground in her. The evidence is not in the record, Your Honor. Both this court, the Eighth Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, and the Third Circuit have all considered the issue of whether compliance with the Iranian social code is persecution per se, and have answered that question in the negative. In Sharif v. INS, this court held that living in accord with conservative social mores is not equivalent to persecution per se.
The difference between conservative and barbaric, though, aren't there? Isn't there? I mean, I was saying, you know, I read your briefs in this case. I couldn't help but think both in tone and substance, it was hard to square with the statements of the President of the United States and the First Lady of the United States with respect to the way Afghan women were treated. I mean, it's very difficult you're from the executive branch to square your statements with theirs.
I understand that, Your Honor. We're just saying that there have been other cases decided both in this circuit and other circuits where the patterns of conduct are even more egregious than in this case.
You're suggesting that there's insensitivity in the system that comes from the judiciary and not come from the executive branch.
Can you say that again, Your Honor?
If there's insensitivity to the issue, it comes from the judicial branch, not from the executive branch, which is the point of Judge Ripple's statement, that the executive says this is outrageous behavior, but the judiciary has approved the deportation on the ground that it is not under the law.
Correct, Your Honor. Again, the INS is not unsympathetic to the petitioner's situation here. Unfortunately, it's the law that applies. And the cases that have been decided have held that this dress code and adherence to it is not persecution per se. The petitioner testified during a hearing.
That's my point, why there's, on one hand, the niece, apparently for the same reason, because she's Christian, is granted asylum and this lady was not.
And again, I can't speak intelligently to that.
Do you know, well, I guess you don't know anything about the case. You don't know where he wrote, where the...
No, Your Honor. I mean, again, there very well would have been other incidents that the niece testified to in her, or other evidence presented in her asylum hearing that was not presented in this hearing.
Well, there was a time difference between when she left Iran and when this lady left Iran, were there not?
Correct, Your Honor. She left shortly after the revolution, the niece did. And the petitioner in this case left in 1991. Again, we just ask in applying the law of asylum to this case, petitioner simply failed to show that the evidence not only supports, but fails to show that it compels any conclusion other than that she suffered from a well-founded fear of persecution. And putting any questions, the INS asks the petition for review be denied.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. Harris has some time. Mr. Harris, your time has expired as well. Therefore, the court, with the thanks to both Mr. Harris and Mr. O'Connor, will take the case under advisement.